Rick, welcome to the show, and everyone listening live, shouts out to you guys. I appreciate it. This is where I would usually be able to pause and cut and edit, and I'm running out of shit to say. So let's just get straight into it. So usually, Rick, what I'll do, and you know this because we've already like prepped for it, but I usually get people to talk about their journey to whatever it is they're doing. So for you as a DP, so how you got into filmmaking in general and to where you're at now with the SASC accreditation, and then also just getting repped over here, because that's like probably like the latest thing, right, for you career wise in terms of like a little step.
Yeah, and I haven't really spoken about that yet, so it'll be cool to talk about it on here. And
yeah, man,
we have the mutual, and we have a shared agent.
Shared agent
as well.
Yeah. Fucking Hollywood ass shit right there. Although okay, I fucking just get signed and then the world shuts down. So
I know. Don't worry. You and I the whole industry. So it's maybe we should talk about it. Just also the time we're recording this is in the middle of a pandemic, which is maybe a bit scary. We can talk about that later if you want to.
Yeah, we can definitely go there. So tell me about your journey from how you first got into the industry or just first started filmmaking and then to where you're at now.
Yeah, so well, thanks for having me, dude. I mean, I'm so glad we're finally doing this, which is cool.
Man, I'm excited.
After high school, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, and I used to play in bands. I played drums for most of my life, like from the age of 13 to 14, I started playing drums. And I didn't know what I wanted to do after high school, after I finished school. So I did a year of sound engineering, which I should be better at setting up all this stuff, but I'm not really. But anyway, I did a year of sound engineering. And one of our projects was to, I treated that as my gap year. Like in South Africa, we treated it as like a bit of a gap year. People go across abroad and go and study or go and bartend or whatever. So I treated a 1 year thing as like my year off to find what I want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, While I was doing that, we had to manage a band and we had to make a music video for a band. And I ended up shooting a really cool music video for a band. And my lecturer at the time was like, "Did you make this?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Dude, it's really cool. You should actually go and study this properly and go get into TV and film." And I was like, at the time, "Can you actually do that? Like, I didn't know you could actually study TV and film." So I eventually got into that, and I went to the University of Johannesburg, and I did a BA in TV, TV and film, audiovisual. But it's very much a base public university based degree.
So you left university, and what was your kind of next step? Likewise, what you finished uni, and then what happened?
I guess I was fortunate enough to just start freelancing straight away. So I started just freelancing, and I didn't really take a real job. I just kind of started shooting corporate stuff and editing corporate stuff and lots of corporate videos. And then slowly but surely got my way into stuff I wanted to really be shooting. Like I said, I spoke about eventually getting a knack for cinematography and saying, "Wow, this is actually really amazing. Getting stuff right in camera is actually really powerful." And just to go back to that other point is there are things you can do with cinematography, like create a mood. You can't create a mood afterwards in post. I mean, you can try crash things and desat stuff, but getting stuff right in camera is really powerful. So I started assisting on sets. I started loading. I started focus pulling for a few people. And then after two or three years, I started shooting my own stuff. And I was afforded the opportunity to actually shoot commercials and music videos and a few short films. And then, and I pretty much do commercials now. That pretty much pays the bills. And then music videos and short films are what kind of keep my soul happy.
To talk about a little bit about that kind of step, that kind of middle step from those 2 years ACing and stuff. Like, how did you know that, okay, if I want a DP, I can AC and then, I can load, then I can second, then I can first and I can step up. How did you know about that route?
I don't think I always knew about it because obviously I didn't go to a traditional film school. I didn't get to go to specialize in cinematography or specialize in one field per se. So I kind of just felt like it was a natural thing because I was always a little bit younger than some of the dudes. So when you show up on set, because sometimes age does play a bit of a factor, you're younger than someone. So if someone says, "Hey, do you want to just come and help out on this commercial or come help out on the set?" You're going to be like, "Yes," because you just want to go and learn. And you get to observe from those older than you. And I think that is really important. And I think we've maybe lost a bit of that sometimes as the world has changed and what's happened with this this change in like technology and accessibility to cameras, because now anybody can grab a camera and say they're a cinematographer, which is a good and a bad thing, because a lot of people who wouldn't have had access to cameras are now shooting. And people, like, for example, I don't think I would have become a cinematographer like 100 years ago or 50 years ago or whatever, because I wouldn't have had access to film. But digital opened up that door space or that door for me. But I think for me, it just felt like a natural progression to go learn from those older than me and those that are like doing. And being younger, you're just going to say yes because you're just hungry to learn.
I mean, because 2 years seems like you said 2 years. I didn't like mishear you, did
yeah,
you? You're saying about 2 years. That seems pretty fast to just leave uni and then be on commercials.
Yeah, I guess like I think I graduated in 2010. So I started working in 2010 and then I've been working for 10 years now, which sounds so scary in TV and film. But like I look at it now and I already see like I've been shooting stuff and I was shooting stuff throughout that. Even when I was assisting, I was shooting stuff. And I think I've always wanted to be more in charge of the helm and more help direct and sail the ship. And I think it's cool to assist and load and stuff, but you can also get stuck like doing that. If you do that too long, people only ever know you as a focus puller. And I have friends like that who are amazing at what they do, but they have only ever been perceived as a focus puller. And it's hard sometimes to get out of that role. And yeah. I think it's one of the most difficult positions ever in the world. I think like it's so like undervalued on set as a good focus puller. They get like, it's not fair how focus pullers are treated, because they'll nail one of the most insane takes and no one will say a thing, but they'll fuck up something that's really fucking difficult. And everyone will be like, oh, the focus puller went soft. He lost it. And I think it's so unfair. It's like, it's a really demanding position.
Like, I guess like a lot of things, if it's good, no one notices.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean, if it's good.
But like, it's so unfair. It's just really unfair.
Yeah, for sure.
But when it's bad, everyone notices. Like when people buzz shots, you notice it and it just takes you out of the film, which is not fair at all.
No. But on the flip side, it's a lot, from what I understand and from conversations with DPs from like the actual film era.
Yeah.
Your job's not as at risk now. You know
yeah,
what I mean? Like a focus puller, if you miss focus on film back in the day, and Ian told me that, it's like people got fired for that shit. And like now you'd have to really fuck up a lot for someone
like
to just
proper. Because there's no fogging the film. There's no like overexposing roles and stuff. There's none of that anymore. So I guess that discipline is gone. But I've heard stories as well. I have like one or two mentors who are older than me. And they've told me stories where they'd be like flying in focus pullers and then like fly them out because they were just not cracking it. And that sounds brutal.
Yeah, that is. It is brutal. That is brutal.
I guess also the finality of film. I guess when you're on film, you can't afford to like go for like 10 takes or 8 takes because the focus puller is not cracking it. Do you know what I mean? Like when now it's digital, you can be like, oh, guys, can I get another one? And everyone's like, well, why not?
Yeah, exactly. I guess it's probably a lot easier for them today, but still like a thankless job.
It's definitely a thankless job, but it's such an important job. And I don't know why. I don't know if maybe 2 years is quick or 2 years is not very quick, but I think I was just hungry to start shooting and get into shooting a lot faster. And then going back to what we spoke about, being a cinematographer, calling yourself a cinematographer, I think that still took me a long time until I would be ready to say that. Because we spoke about this, but it's a tricky thing.
You can go there again if you want to.
Yeah,
it might lead somewhere else.
I think it is just a confidence thing. It's a self-confidence thing when you start calling yourself a cinematographer. And there will always be haters. There will always be people who will be like, or you'll pretty much be your own self-critic. And we'll all kind of say this, like we always say, I don't think I'm ready or my work's not good enough. But everyone, you and I speak about this a lot, and everyone's work is so different and everyone has a different voice, and you just have to embrace that and kind of see where your strengths are and lean on your strengths and then work on your weaknesses and be the best version of yourself. I think that's something I'm trying to grasp as a DP, is become the best version of myself, not try to be better than someone else or try to be the next Deakins or the next Bradford Young. Just be like the next version of myself, the best version I can be.
Like, at what point did you get a mentor, and did you actively search for like, right, I need someone that's going to kind of, is like my go-to for help or support or resource, or like, you know, was it a conscious effort that you wanted to find someone that can mentor you, or did it just happen and then you realized the value in it once you had a mentor?
I don't think I have a single mentor per se. I think I've had many mentors as I've kind of grown and as I've kind of matured and gone through my like career. But like, it is kind of cool being part of the SAAC is like, we have a WhatsApp group where we chat often, or I chat to cinematographers older than me in South Africa, and I'll often chat to them about like, how are they dealing with family? How do they balance family versus life? That's always something I've struggled with, like personal life versus work. It's something I've always personally struggled with as a cinematographer. And I've had many failed like relationships, and girlfriends have like been angry at me because of my career and stuff. And I often chat to dudes about that kind of stuff. Or I've had mentors when I was growing up and older cinematographers that have done this before, and you kind of chat to them. But the world's also changed so much that they say that things have evolved in a new way, and they kind of fall on the back burner because upcoming cinematographers embrace stuff, and sometimes I find older cinematographers don't embrace change. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a scary thing, because I never want to be a dinosaur. I never want to not consider new technology or embrace new technology. Even like aspect ratio, something as stupid as shooting like 9x16, it took me a while to get into that, but now like through Instagram and stuff, I embraced it really fast, and you just learn. It's just another format.
The course you did when you're at university, you said it was pretty broad. It wasn't cinematography specific. So what were your like go-to learning resources when you decided, okay, like I want to be able to light and I want to know composition, and you kind of made the decision that you wanted to be a DP? Like, where was your source of education for that?
I think I want to definitely say the internet. I think YouTube, I think podcasts. I'm still religious about listening to podcasts and watching tutorials online and stuff. I think the biggest thing I can attest to or like kind of like preach is creating your own content and shooting films. Like I saw Louis in the chat somewhere there, and Louis and I have done a 48-hour film project. We've actually done a few. I'm a big fan of creating content and creating my own stuff. So I've done a lot of short films, a lot of music videos. I've directed and shot them, but I mostly just want to shoot them. But I think by doing is the only way to get better and better. And that's what's really taught me. And I've made mistakes while doing those things. I've made a lot of short films and a lot of narrative things, and that's the only way in my heart to really like learn properly is by doing them and creating, because you'll just get better. It becomes muscle memory after a while. Composition and lighting, they start becoming something you can just lean on because you know what's going to work. I'm not saying it's always right, but you do learn what works, and you can lean towards something.
Everyone has their kind of little go-to things, right?
Yeah.
Just
going back, like saying, no, I'm agreeing, like podcasts and the internet. I think the internet is such a cool place right now. I think there's never been like more cinematographers in the world than there are right now, but there's also never been so much content, and it's like so much stuff to learn. There's so many resources. It's just really interesting.
Like how are you coming? How are these shoots coming to you? The shorts, sorry. How are these shorts like coming in onto your radar?
I think a lot of it is networking. I think I do try talk to or keep in contact with like directors I want to work with or directors I know who are going to be up and coming or going to work on stuff or want to do stuff with me. Sometimes I'll try to do a bit of a group initiative. A lot of times I try to be like the initiator of projects. A lot of times I'll say, guys, there's quite a big Afrikaans film festival in South Africa, and every year they try to make like 10 or 12 films, short films. And I always try like put together teams, or I'll chat to a director and say, what do you think about doing this? Should we try enter this? Or there's a 48-hour film project. Should we try and do this together? So I try be an initiator with some of those things. And I think a big part of it also helps is when you are creating a lot of content, people see you doing it or people see you shooting, and people are like, oh, cool. Maybe he's not too bad. Maybe he's not too shit. Maybe we could see if we could use him on the next project. And I think by putting work out there, it helps. I'm a big fan of Instagram. I know you and I talk about this often, but I think, putting content out there and putting out your work, putting out your best foot forward, I think helps as well. And it's that fine line of being proud. So having pride of your work, but also not being overconfident, I think works.
In terms of sharing your work on Instagram?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it's like it's tough putting yourself and your art out there. And this is something I think we're all super critical of our own work. And you sometimes look back and you're like, I wish I could have fixed that, or I wish I could have fixed that backlight, or I could have fixed this. And it's tricky sometimes. But I think sometimes people don't understand that was how it was in that moment. And those are the resources you had, and you made the best of it. So I think just being confident about the work you put out there and being proud of it, I think it helps a lot. Because if you believe in yourself, this is something we've spoke about a lot, and I keep referring to that because you and I chat a lot about these things. But if you're confident in yourself, then someone else will be. I think if you're proud enough to put your work out there, then someone's like, well, if he's obviously like proud enough to say he's a DP or whatever, or she's proud enough to be a DP or whatever, then people will like hire you.
Claiming the title of cinematographer or DOP. Because we like anyone can anyone can do it. Like, I literally did it. Like,
yeah.
I'm sure at the point that I first started calling myself cinematographer, I was definitely not a cinematographer.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? I think if you put aspiring, like when it's the early stage, if you put aspiring DOP or aspire, I think like at what point are you not aspiring?
I think that's it's a brilliant point. And I remember for a long time, I was like nervous to call myself a cinematographer, because it's like, how do you transition that role? This is maybe a bit like weird to say, but from going from a videographer to a cinematographer, how do you, who draws that line? Is it you yourself, or is it the work that you work on? Once you start working on commercials and you craft and create light, does that mean you're a cinematographer?
Well, that's exactly. Like it's always, even now, that's still kind of like, plagues me. I'm like, who, because there's, I mean, I guess if you go to film school and you come out of film school and you've got your certificate or whatever, and there's some physical that says like you're trained or qualified in cinematography.
No, it's a great point. I think it's a really good point. I think if I can speak personally from my opinion, for a long time, like I said, I was not nervous, but I was hesitant to say it because I feel like I hadn't done enough. I was like, when had I done enough, or when was I proud of stuff? And then I think I started looking at my work and I started feeling prouder, and I started looking at stuff and I was like, that actually doesn't look too bad, and it's looking pretty good, and things started taking shape. And after a while, you start looking at your work and you're like, I know what I'm doing, and I think I can get through a day. I can make a 10-hour day on set. I do a lot of commercials, and those pay the bills, and I do a lot of narrative, and I do a lot of music videos, so it's quite diverse and I wear different hats. But I started looking at my stuff and saying, I'm slowly finding my style and slowly becoming the best version of myself. So I guess like I have grown. I definitely would say I know how to somewhat light a scene and somewhat know how to do something. So I think it did take a while. For me, it did definitely. But maybe it's because I'm a 5D generation. I don't know. I'm a little bit, I think cameras like that changed the way I saw things. I don't know.
Was that a big change for you? So when you were studying, were you using, like fucking DV cams or something?
Yeah, dude, definitely. We're using mini DV. We were using like PD-170s and like PD-250s and all these like weird old little cameras with the smallest little sensors. And like to get depth of field, you would have to run all the way down there and zoom into a shot to get like some form of shallow depth of field. And it, like you learned how to do it, but it wasn't beautiful. And then I think I remember when the 5D came out, and I remember like one of my friends had bought it and we used it on a project. And I was like, dude, this is like all the stuff I'd always learned about, I'm finally seeing what it actually does. And that's where I think I maybe also fell in love with cinematography, is once you understood how beautiful an image can actually look and get it right in camera, I think that's when I kind of fell in love with the cinematography all over again, but properly. And then I remember buying myself like a Rebel T2i or like a 550D. And I remember that changed my career as well. Owning a camera changed. And then eventually I could afford a 5D and I started shooting on that thing like every day. It was cool, and that changed stuff. And then I just got better and better, and we started shooting our own projects and shooting music videos and shooting short films and started winning competitions. I started entering a lot of awards and like competitions and winning stuff. Like, I think also it doesn't mean shit, but also it looks good, and then people somewhat take notice, even if it's for a brief second.
I guess it does mean to win stuff, man. You got like some fucking chroma green. But that's getting keyed out. Or we're going to put some...
Is it gone?
No.
Did I just flash merch?
Yeah, I know this guy. Trying to get some fucking Panavision hookup. Let's talk about like expos and stuff, because you came to London for BSC Expo this year, and I remember like you were like stoked to go around and look at all this kit and like play with all this kit. And I know for a fact that the kind of shoots that you're on, you have access to more like, I don't want to say better, but like just bigger. You're on commercials that are far bigger than the stuff I'm doing. So, and just from looking at like your BTS photos, I know for a fact that like the productions you're on are a lot bigger than mine. In terms of crew and like equipment. So then when we're at like BSC Expo and you're all starry eyed over this kit, like, and I'm like, I'm there and I'm like, I don't get it. Like, I don't know, but I don't know if I'm, and I'm like, Steph is if he's still listening, like Steph is the same. He was going around, he's loving it. And I'm like, I feel like, am I like missing something? Like should, because for me, like if I can't use it, like actually use it, and or even take it and do a test, like a real test, and not like something where I'm like stuck in the confines of a booth, I'm just like, I don't know, I don't get excited about it. And I'm wondering, like, someone like yourself, you're getting like hyped and excited about this kit, and I'm like, fuck, do I need to be like getting hyped about kit too? Is that like something that, or am I just missing it? Like what's, but then that kind of led us onto the difference in like equipment in the market. So
yeah,
in London, you pretty much can get hold of whatever you want. If you have the budget, you can get, and obviously the time, but
yeah,
you can get hold of some rare lenses, or I don't know, they're like, the latest fucking Sony, whatever the fuck that thing is called, the Venice with the detachable fucking, I can't even remember.
Like umbilical system, the whole real.
Yeah,
system.
Like you can just like here, there's everything is in London. So you can, I and think, I'm sure the same is out there for Manchester. I'm not forgetting you, Mike. But then so you don't have, like you, I thought it was crazy. You said there's like what, two sets of Astera Titans?
No. We have more than those. I think we probably have two in Joburg. Like I stay in Johannesburg. Like this, it's kind of tricky because I think if I had to answer your question in a roundabout way, I think it's because we have less exposure to stuff. I don't get to go to like cinematography expos. So the BSC Expo was just mind blowing to see stuff that you hear about and you read about on like forums and blogs, but then to finally see it in person is just so like mouth-watering. I don't know how else to explain it. Like seeing those new Cook lenses, or seeing like the new camera, or like we are a bit starved on this side of the world a little bit for gear sometimes. Like we don't always have as many lens options. For example, for the K35s, the Canon K35s, we have two in a whole country. That's like two sets in the whole country, which is one set lives mostly in Cape Town, other set sometimes frequents Joburg. It really depends, but we're a little bit starved for gear. So I think I'm also a bit of a tech head, and I've always have been a technical person. I love gear. I don't think it's the be all and like end all of stuff. I think you can make beautiful imagery with very little, and you don't always need all the toys and the bells and whistles, but it is cool to see like beautiful anamorphic glass, or see beautiful lenses or new cameras that have just come out. I think a big part of BSC Expo, why I enjoyed it so much also was with, do you remember how long we stood at the Cook stand for? I don't know if you remember. You check out a chat.
Someone said you get excited about equipment.
Definitely. You see, no, I definitely do. And I love gear and I love cameras and I love lenses. But I think for the Cook thing, what made me so excited about that is because we actually met, remember there was that Katie chick, or Catherine, I think her name was, she actually runs Cook and she's their marketing person. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah.
We spoke to her first. Oh, Kathy, that's her name. Her name's Kathy from Cook. And we spoke to her for so long, and it was so cool to have a real face-to-face relationship with someone I talk to a lot on Instagram, or someone I talk to a lot on Facebook. So that's why I was just really stoked, I think, that day.
This is the last thing on my list, then I'm just fucking winging it after this. So we'll talk about, this still is kind of in line with your journey, I guess. So you are repped in South Africa, right?
Yeah.
So
go for it. I'll wait for you.
Oh man, I fucking knew this fucking delay thing was going to happen. How did that come about? And was that always, when you decided you wanted to be a DP, was that always like an objective? So like you wanted to get repped, or was that just kind of, it just happened?
I think I kind of breezed through my story a bit in the beginning because I was nervous and I just rambled, and I feel a little bit better now.
No, that's cool. Yeah, relax. Back to it if you want.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I didn't finish saying, like, obviously, like I started taking cinematography very seriously. I started shooting more. Maybe Carter can cut this up better and make me sound like I'm actually a coherent human being and I don't have ADHD.
I have to do it for myself first.
Yeah, two times. But like I started shooting a lot more, started doing a lot of corporate videos, and then eventually I moved into music videos and short films and narrative. And then I really wanted to get into commercials because I think commercials are really interesting and they're really fun and they're quick turnarounds and they quick return on investment. So you can shoot something really cool today and a week later the commercial's out and it's, everything is always different. It's different style or a different brand or a different director who's bringing a different style, and he or she can bring something new to it you didn't think about. And I love collaboration. I've actually always been a big fan of collaboration, and I get along quite easily with people. I try keep egos in check, and I try keep my own creative ego in check a lot of times. I try to do what's right for the project. But anyway, I spent like, I think I got signed 2 years ago in South Africa to Exposure Crew. My agent's Daphne. She's really cool from Exposure Crew. She looks after me. And I did have to knuckle down for a while in South Africa. I had to like keep chipping away till I could pretty much prove that I'm somewhat, I don't know how to phrase it correctly, but someone could notice you. Because we pretty much have like three agents pretty much here who pretty much sign DPs. And I kind of met with two of them, and the one just spoke to me, and Daphne and I just got along so well, and she started looking after me. And I haven't looked back after that. I've really enjoyed being with her now. She's been really cool, and she's like actually a friend, someone I talk to a lot. And me and her speak like when we are shooting, when the world is actually working and we're actually shooting, her and I speak like probably every second or third day. We WhatsApp each other. It is a friendship. You end up being friends with your agents, which has been really cool. Yeah, so I'm with Exposure Crew in South Africa. They look after me here. And it's a cool kind of give and take. It feels like a give and take. I think we can talk about agents just now because I know you wanted to speak about this.
I guess for me, a lot's changed in like a year.
And yeah,
there were questions that I didn't know or things that I hadn't experienced like a year ago in terms of representation and an agent. And now I'm kind of a little bit on the other side of it.
Congrats, by the way. Talk about it.
Nah, it's this is not me, bro. This is not. I'm just thinking like, how the fuck did this happen? It's got to be a mistake here. Something went wrong. But we can come back to my side of things afterwards.
Okay,
but,
cool.
So one of the like misconceptions that people have with agents is that they get you work, and they do get you work, but you. For a long time, you're bringing in your own work, the clients that you've probably already had. And I'm sure you know that. So what was it like for you when you first got signed? What was like the ratio of work that you were bringing in compared to like the work they were giving you? And has that changed over time? Have you found yourself, because, you know, when you get signed, you're like, unless you're fucking Roger Deakins or someone, you're going to be like the bottom of the food chain, right? Like you're the new guy that probably no one knows. So then why would someone just start giving you all the work over these people that are established and the agent knows that they make their money? What was your experience with that?
Yeah, dude, I think 100%. I think when you first sign, they do kind of give you like having an agent does kind of give you a badge of approval. I did kind of find that. I found having someone in my corner gave me they kind of verify you. I know it sounds terrible to say that, but it does help a little bit. It does help somewhat because people are like, okay, cool. Maybe we can take him or her a bit seriously, like a bit more seriously now. And that's what I experienced in South Africa. So we can talk about the UK next after this. But in South Africa, I definitely experienced that. I felt like companies who had never maybe taken me seriously, even if they knew who I was, they hadn't taken me so seriously, production companies. And then as soon as I got signed, I felt like people took me a little bit more seriously. And then the ratio, I think I was bringing in a lot of work at first. I was bringing in about like 80% of the jobs. And now I would say it's about a good 50-50. And that's, I think people assume, or DOPs assume, that once you have an agent, you're like golden. I totally agree, you're not. I think you could still have an agent and sit at home every day. I think it's about you being responsible for still maintaining those relationships and growing new relationships and trying to also create like new work somehow. I think it's by meeting with people, having coffee dates with directors. I think those things are important.
I guess the go-to way, and we've all done it and probably still do it, like reaching out to a director on Instagram or wherever and be like, hey, your work's sick, like let's go for it. I feel like now I've done that so many times that I can't do it. Like I mean, I try to always, if I do reach out to someone, it's like got to be someone that I really like, I do fuck with their work. And like, I wouldn't be trying to get in there just because they look busy or they're doing cool shit. But how, I don't know, how do you feel about that? Has your stance on doing that changed, or are you still just like plowing through trying to make connections that way?
I think I've given up on trying to. I've done that before as well. Like sometimes there are directors you can't help but reach out to because you're like, wow, that stuff's amazing. And I've let it become organic, which I think is becoming better. If there's a chance to meet someone and we really meet and have a coffee and we get along well, then I'm so happy to have that happen with directors. But I've also learned that some relationships can't be forced. And if you don't get along with someone, you just don't get along with them. It's in a work-wise capacity. And I'm okay with that. I think there's there's always going to be people you get along with, and there's always people you're not going to get along with and you don't agree with. And that's also okay. So I don't want to force it. I mean, I'm also growing so much as a cinematographer and changing all the time. And so are directors, and everyone's just becoming and finding, like, becoming who they want to be and find their voice. So I try not slide into DMs too much. I try not do that, because I think it comes across as like snaky. We've spoken about this. And I think I try just be real. And if I really do, if someone's work really resonates with me, I'll definitely tell them, wow, that was a beautiful piece, or I really loved what you did here. But I'm also not going to like blow smoke and just say, oh, that's really cool, just because I want to work with someone. I think I try to be honest. I've tried to learn that lesson.
I've chatted with other DPs that are very busy doing very good work, and they've basically said that, like, that it's a fucking game. Like, you play the game, you know what I mean? And they're just cutthroat. Like, they'll DM anyone. They don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
But maybe, like, that, you know, that works for them. I'm not sure I could.
But imagine a world of just everyone doing that. I think it's like, it's just chaos.
Stepping over each other to get to the top.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, there's definitely people who are like that. I just don't want to be. I don't want to have to do it like that. I think I'd rather miss my turn and wait till the next time, and then work with a director who really wants to work with me, and not have to step on people to get there. I don't know. It's different. Everyone's on their own path, and everyone can do what they want to do. I can only do what I want to do. I can control how I want to be.
We've had the conversation about it, like my experience last year with just like being super quiet with work, and then basically my mental health like falling apart. When I did have a lot of downtime last summer, I went on a mission. Like I already kind of told you about it, but maybe the people listening might want to hear about it. Because I was so quiet, I was just like, right, I'm going to do everything I can to like meet new people, like meet producers or directors, or do what I can. And I had some meetings, and like some of them were cool. And sometimes you just like, it's like when you go on a date with someone and you know straight away, it's like, this is not going to work. Like there's just like the whole conversation is awkward, you know, it's just not there. But yeah, one thing that I discovered in reaching out to so many people last summer was that even the kind of connections you make, even if they're good and like you feel like you had a vibe with that person and you both kind of mutually kind of feel like this could go somewhere and we could work together. But sometimes like those meetings just take a long time afterwards for them to actually come to anything. Like the majority of people I met last summer, for example, I haven't worked with any of them really. I still chat to them occasionally, but then in January this year, like out of nowhere, and it was one of the kind of the meetings that I didn't really think was that kind of, I didn't think anything would come of it, but then the guy hits me up, he's like, hey, I've got a music video. And this is like 6 months after and basically having radio silence. So one thing I learned is like, even however you go about trying to network and trying to meet people, it's like things can happen, but they just don't always happen as quick as you'd like them to.
I agree, dude. I agree 100%. I've had like, yeah, see, Mike's even saying planting the seeds. I agree 100%. I've had meetings where like a year later, a director will say, hey, are you keen to come and work on this with me? I finally think it's the right job for us. And that happens. I mean, that's a year later, but because we had that coffee date or we met up for a drink or whatever, I think it's inevitable, so I agree.
Yeah, I think I just, it took me a while to, I don't know if it was that it took me a while to learn that, or it's just like, because I guess when you're quiet, you just want to work, so you want to do everything you can. But then when you get busy, you just kind of forget about that because you don't even have time to kind of think about that.
Sean had a cool little comment there saying about, or that person recommends you to someone. I think that's something
to not take
for granted. Word of mouth is so powerful, especially as a DP. I find sometimes if one director kind of vets you and says you were cool to work with, often I'll notice that other directors will often follow or kind of trust that director and be like, cool, they worked really well with him or her, and now I'm happy to like work with, give them a chance.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's definitely something I've experienced. I've experienced that many times in my career.
Yeah, I don't know if it was you I was saying this to, but like when I looked at my kind of my website and the work that I had up, and I looked at how like those jobs came about, it did end up being like the majority of them, those jobs like came to me from another person, like either like a DP friend of mine couldn't do the job, and they recommended me. So I think like sometimes, I think almost, you're probably right, like recommendations are probably more, like do far more than any networking. let's talk about the kind of the South African market.
Okay, cool. I was going to talk about Undercrank quickly, just because we haven't finished that. Because that's probably the newest thing that's happened to me, and you and I haven't... You've put it out there. I haven't put it out there. I haven't really spoken about it yet. So something I haven't spoken about is I obviously was in London for like most of January and February. I was there to go meet an agent or go find agents and stuff and go meet with people and look what works over there as well. So I met with Kirsten, who you also signed with at Undercranked. And yeah, it's I'm really happy. I haven't really announced it properly. I haven't really spoken about it to anyone.
I think you've just done it live.
You're right. I've just done it live. So it's just, I really haven't spoken about it properly. But it's cool. I'm really like stoked to have an agent in the UK who looks after me and she's amazing. And yeah, so it's cool. And I know you're also signed, which is so funny how it happened. I don't know if you remember that week we both spoke about it.
It was just fucking, it was really strange. Just to give everyone listening like context. So, I got an email probably, I don't know, maybe sometime. It was like a couple of weeks after BSC, I think, and I got an email. I got this email like, "Hey, I'm Kirsten. We're at this. We run this like agency called Undercranked. I don't know if you've heard of us. Do you have like a manager or an agent?" And straight away, I was like, "This is a fucking, someone's taking a piss." Like, this is. I was like, "Of course I know. Like, Undercranked's decent, man. They rep some fucking really cool people." But yeah, I was just like, I couldn't, like, cause for me, like I did always want to have an agent just because I feel like it would open up doors for me, and put me in a better position, to kind of like guide my career. But I always wanted it to be like, I didn't want to chase it. Like I didn't want to reach out to an agent, mostly out of fear, cause I didn't want to get shut down and then be like, "Nah. Like, sorry, mate, you're just not fucking good enough." So then when someone that I see is like legit is reaching out to me and saying like, "Come in for a coffee, like this could be cool." I was just like, "Nah, like this has got, maybe, I don't know, maybe they need a new assistant or something. Like they're trying to hire me as an assistant."
Fucking, I remember you telling me that. And I was like, "Dude, you're mad. She actually wants to meet with you. There's a reason why she wants to meet with you." Yeah. You're like,
but dude, I was even so going funny. I was going to the meeting like on the train into Soho, like to Soho. It's like, this can't be right. It's got to be the wrong, it's got to be someone else. I don't know. But yeah, it we had a meeting and it was cool and it happened. But after I got that email, so where I was going with this, sorry, everyone, I kind of went a bit far. Where I was going with this is I didn't want to like talk about it in case it led to nothing. Cause I was obviously like super excited about it. And if nothing came of it, I would be bummed out, and then I'd have to tell people that I talk about it to, like, "Oh no, nothing came of it." So I didn't say shit to anyone, just my girlfriend. And I screenshotted it to Rick, because he, like, we've had agent conversations like a million times, and I sent the screenshot of the email to Rick. And then what did you send back to me straight away?
I think I sent, I don't know, you tell me. What did I send?
you sent me a screenshot of your email from Kirsten saying like, "Hey, it's great to meet you." Basically saying like, "Yeah, we're going to sign you."
I think it was the odds of that week. Somehow the universe just wanted to have a laugh. And I think it was amazing. And I'm so glad that happened. Because I remember you made such a funny analogy, but it was just funny. You made me laugh a lot, and I was just like, "Dude, it's cool. It's like, let's do this."
What was the analogy?
I don't want to say it.
You don't want to say it now.
I don't want to say it. It was just really funny.
Yeah.
I just remember you just said it, and it was kind of like, for me, it was really cool. It was a cool moment where I was just like, "Dude, if we both get signed, it would be really cool to have someone." And you and I, which I've really appreciated from my relationship, and maybe you can cut this out, but like, it's just been cool to have someone to have my back and speak to about, because we talk to each other about a lot of stuff, and for me, a big thing was getting representation overseas, and it's something I've been trying for a long time. So, well, not a long time, for the last like year. So it's cool to have that, and now I also have someone in that family and ask you about stuff and ask you about advice. So I'm glad we have that. It's cool.
Yeah. I mean,
and Kristen's cool. Kristen's so rad. She called me just now to wish me good luck. She phoned me just before this, and she's like, "Good luck." And that was cool. You want someone like that in your corner. I don't know.
So we'll continue on this. This is technically like a step back if we're going on the journey of your career so far. So you have a SASC accreditation. So Talk to me about that. Tell me about how that happened. Because, I mean, I don't know. Over here in London, to get a BSc accreditation, yeah, BSc, I don't BSc know if there's anyone level. Under fucking 35 or 40 that has that. I mean, there's a few younger people.
There are some guys who, like, I think, who were we talking about the other day who shot Avenue 5? I think, was it?
Eben.
Was Eben. It Eben? Yeah, he's 30. I think he's in his late 30s, but he definitely has it. He's amazing. His work is brilliant.
I mean, it's cool. It's cool that it's kind of, maybe it was always open to DPs of that age, and we just never really realized it because we were younger, so they were older at that time.
Maybe we're just, do you know what I mean? Is that what you're saying? You're just saying we're getting old. Yeah, we're getting old. It's fine.
But yeah, how did that come about for you? And is it something you always kind of aspired to?
Yeah, definitely. I think like in the last like 3 or 4 years, I had started thinking about it, and I was like, I really want to get my SASC accreditation and be accepted into the society, which is really cool. And it's a really cool thing. You have to be nominated by two other members, and then they put you in front of the board and they think about it and they decide and they look at your work. And last year, the year before, I'd been put forward and I didn't get it. And then, so that was in 2018, I was put forward, I didn't get it. And then 2019, I was put forward and I got it last year. And it's been cool. I got to run the SASC Instagram, when was it, in January? It was really cool to do that. And I posted a whole bunch of tips. So if you do want to check out some stuff, let me just check out what they're... No, I missed it. I'll go check now. So if you do want to go check out some stuff, it's the Insta handle is Insta and then _ SASC. And I think I ran it in January and I got to post some cool stuff, what I was really proud of in my journey so far. And it's probably more coherent than what I've spoken to Carter about on here. It's a little bit more structured. And I did about 9 posts about my kind of journey as a cinematographer. And so that's kind of cool. And yeah, it's been cool. It's really cool. We have a WhatsApp group. We've all been keeping each other like company now during this whole pandemic, and we speak to each other. And SASC is cool. I've been really. It's obviously no way on the level of ASC or BSC, if I had to put it that way. I just look at the caliber that's on BSC. But there's some really talented SASC members, and there's guys who are my heroes and I look up to. And there's some really amazing cinematographers and DOPs here.
And did it change anything for you career wise?
No, I wouldn't. Yes and no. I mean, again, it maybe gives you like a small claim of like someone's verifying you or giving you some form of credit, but it's not going to overnight make you better. It's no way made me a better cinematographer, but it is somewhat nice to know that my peers thought I was worthy of it somehow, or I've shown enough to be considered. I've been invited to become a board member now at the SASC.
Damn, bro. You're moving fast. You're moving fast with those guys. The fucking chairman in a couple of years.
So I've been invited to become a board member. So I think I'll be quite a junior board member, but it'll be cool to be part of that. And that'll be fun. And I don't know. I love helping. I love teaching. I love learning. So I think I'm a student for life. So it'll be cool to do that.
Should we just go into the Q&A then for like half an hour? Do you want to do that?
Yeah, let's go for it. Let's do half an hour questions. That sounds good.
Oh, I have a question too.
Okay, go with yours while I'm looking.
My question. Can I go for it. So I can cue jump as I set this whole shit up so I get to ask my question first. I've asked you this before, I think, but it's always been quite fleeting. But lighting black skin. And kind of mixed skin tones, basically anything non-Caucasian, really. What's specifically black skin, I think, because your stuff looks wicked. And I find like, I don't know, I don't struggle, but I don't feel as confident sometimes. And your stuff looks wicked. So have you got go-to techniques for lighting black skin, or do you do anything different at all? Maybe you just do it exactly the same.
I think if we can piggyback this into Steph's question, because it'll have to do with grid cloth as well. And it's not like a go-to thing. It's just there's rules. You try with darker skin tone. Darker skin tone has like a really lovely quality when you have bigger sources. So I always try to walk bigger sources in really close. And I sometimes use a polarizer on darker skin tones because you can really dial out these beautiful, like that beautiful, like the reflectiveness underneath the skin. You can really play with that. So I try to use a polarizer sometimes in camera, like a little rotopolar, you dial in larger sources. And then I think for me, darker skin tones really work well with color. So don't be scared to play with a bit of color. So sometimes I'll play with a really beautiful, like maybe a cooler backlight, or put a bit of RGB, but we go like a peacock blue on a bit of an edge light or rim light. I think dark skin tones really handle color really beautifully. So I think you shouldn't be scared of that. So those are some things I try applying my work. I wouldn't say there's like a go-to trick. I mean, I don't always have the same lighting setups. I can't always have the same fixtures. But I am a big fan of, Steph asked about kind of lights and go-to like textiles. And I'm a big fan of grid cloth. And I don't know if you've ever, I don't know what you guys would maybe call it there. I think it is called grid cloth around the world. But if you look at grid cloth, it has little like hatches in it and it kind of shapes the light. And I find grid cloth also slightly warms up a little bit. It's I don't know, silk has this reflector like sheeny quality I don't like. It often shows hot spots in foreheads.
I call it plasticky.
I don't like that, even though it's not technically plasticky,
but that, yeah. It's like synthetic. I feel like it's
exactly.
It's like a synthetic look or synthetic diffusion almost.
I agree. So I try to go for more grid cloths or more fabric textiles. I go for things a little bit more, I don't know, just look a bit more authentic. And I always try to go for bigger sources. Bigger sources, normally one big source is going to normally treat you well.
Yeah. Sean's saying unbleached muslin.
Yeah, and unbleached muslin also really cool to bounce into as well. I'm a big fan of bouncing into unbleached muslin. If you make a book light, try bounce into something like that as well. Also really cool.
Mm.
Okay, so that's Steph's question and your question answered. Yeah, it's good. What would you guys advise young black female directors in South Africa? I'm not sure what they're asking about this question. Is this advice for up and coming young female directors, black female directors? I think it's tricky because I can't always comment on all these things and I don't always know the intricacies of being a director as well. Sometimes it's a bit tricky, but I really think in South Africa, there's so many stories being told now. And I think everyone is really wanting to hear voices and hear everyone's voices. So I think I know it's difficult to say because you shouldn't say it shouldn't matter where you're from, but it does still matter. And I think it's tricky because of the political situation in this country. But I think more so than ever now, I work with so many female directors and I love working with female directors. I love working with male directors, but I work with a lot of female directors and I find a big part of it is communication. So I wouldn't have anything to say because I can't voice from that side, but I could say that you should still just go out there and make content and be working as hard as you can. And I think if you make enough noise, people will take notice of you and people pay attention. If you're making cool stuff, people will pay attention, if that's what the question meant. What did you take from that question?
Yeah, I think like almost unfortunately, like you have to work twice as hard, you know, just to be noticed, which fucking sucks. But then when you do get noticed, like you get your shine. Because my girlfriend is an actress and a stand-up comedian. And she says this all the time. She's like, I can go on stage and get, I can do like a 10-minute set and get far more like laughs than the two or three guys before me. But she doesn't win. She like, if there's an open mic competition, she won't win them. Even though it's fucking obvious that the audience are like vibing with her set more than these guys. And she's always saying like, I just have to work twice as hard and be twice as good and then I'll get recognized. And I think even if you just have that mentality, you know, like then eventually you're gonna get your shine, you know? Yeah,
I think that's the best way to put it, dude. I think that's such a great way to say it.
I was trying to figure out how to say it without sounding like a douche because...
I know, it's...
Do you know what I mean? Even last year when I just had no work and my mental health just crumbled, like of everyone, of every kind of like ethnicity or gender in our industry, like white males have it the easiest. So I can't even imagine what it's like, you know, for like minorities.
Yeah. No, I agree.
So yeah, hustle.
Yeah, I think hustle. But then also be happy on the pro side is the industry has changed. And I do think things have moved to the better. Like those dinosaurs are dying and I'm happy about that. When I say dinosaurs, I mean those old school mentality.
Old gatekeepers, yeah.
Yeah, like those, like I'm glad that those sets, I'm glad I'm not allowed, like I'm not on those kind of sets anymore where you have people making sexist jokes or people being sexually harassed. Like it still happens on sets. I'm not saying that doesn't, but sets are really mixed. I try to have female loaders in my camera team always, or I try to have a female focus puller. I try make it like try keep it mixed up because it really needs to be, because I find that's that's the best way to handle it. I think it keeps the set safe, then everyone's there, and it gives everyone equal opportunity. So I always try to keep females in my camera team as well, and I think it works so well. And it shouldn't really be about male or female. It should just be about who's really good for the job.
Well, yeah,
same exactly. As with directors. Yeah, I think it's the same thing for directors as well. So as much as it is an uphill battle, like you're saying, it's a bit tricky to get your foot in the door, I do think the industry's changed for the better, and I think people are definitely, like, people know what's wrong and right, and people can call each other out. And then I think as DOPs, it's also our, like, responsibility to call people out. If you see someone acting on a set, just be like, that's not cool. Don't do that shit. Like, it's not funny. Like, when I was younger, I've seen older, like, operators do it, and I'm just used to sit there. And when you're in a weaker position, it's hard to speak out, but you should just speak out against stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, for sure. I find it interesting. I mean, this isn't...
I want to read what Matsepo said there, because it's a really good point. And she's a really badass female, black female director in South Africa. And she's really talented. She goes, very true. Females have to work twice as hard and be twice as good. Black female directors have to work three times hard and be three times as good, because you're fighting not just as a female, but also as a black female. So yeah. I think Matsepo, that's a great comment that she's made there. And she's a badass. She's really talented. So then Gavin speaks about light meters. I definitely still carry a light meter around on sets. I have one of the older... What's the model?
758.
Yeah, the older one. I really have that one, and I love carrying on set, especially for studio stuff, green screen stuff. I always use it. And sets that move a little bit slower, I use it. Otherwise, I trust my false color a hell of a lot on my small HD. I have a 702 that I trust, and I trust that thing a hell of a lot. But I still find a light meter is really helpful to walk around, and use the spot meter a lot as well. I point that towards windows, and I kind of can tell if a window is burning out and how much of a stop I need. And then Alex's question is CTS or CTO. Definitely CTS. I think CTO looks really bad on digital cameras, and CTS just looks a lot better. So in my opinion, it gives you that more of that kind of, just takes the edge off and makes HMIs look a little bit better.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit more subtle. How do you guys know on social media? Oh, that is a fucking good question, and something I would love to chime in on. If I'm allowed, these are Rick's questions.
No, go for it. You go first, and then I'll pop in.
It says, how do you guys navigate social media? BTS versus actual posts on your feed. I've given up on the feed and just use the stories to show I'm working. See, this is like, that's interesting, because I keep going back to this like my summer last year, where everything kind of, I had a good couple of months of very little work. And I just couldn't kind of get. Do you guys hear that? I hope there's not some weird sound. It's my dog's just drinking loads of water and just making loads of noise. I had to, with social media, I had to turn, like, I just stopped looking at it, especially Instagram and people's stories. See, you're saying, Sean, that you post BTS on your story to show that you're working. And for me, that fucked me up. Not yours personally, but like seeing all my friends and people I know working, and like, or at least they appear to be, because you never really know. You could be like posting shit from 2 months ago. And I was looking at these stories of like people I know and people I like know personally, and I'm like, fuck, like, how are they working? Like, what are they doing, like, to make that happen? Like, what am I doing wrong, or what am I not doing? Like, why are they getting all the work and why I'm not? And that, like, for me, that was just dangerous for my mental health. And I had to, and Steph's in this group, so I said, like, Steph's my homie, I love Steph, we hang out and we've had coffee and like we're cool, but he works a lot, and I had to turn his like stories off so that his wouldn't come up, because I was just, you know what I mean? I'm just like, fuck, man. I don't know how this, like,
Steph just called you a mug.
Yeah. And then, but like that, but that's just me, you know, like maybe other people don't, like, other people see that, maybe they look at everyone else working, it's like motivation, but for me, it just, like, it fucking broke me.
Definitely. And it is, because like it's such a competitive industry. It's definitely such a competitive thing, and of course you would feel like that. I feel like it. We all feel like that, because you're like, why am I not shooting that job, why am I not on that with that director, that's normally my director. And we get possessive, and we have no right to, but we do kind of get possessive. Yeah. So I can see it's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it's tricky, because at the same time, like, I don't know what those people are doing to get those jobs. You know, I don't know how long they've been working with those people. Like, it's your brain, like, just creating shit from a photo. You know, there's no truth unless someone actually says the whole situation on that, which they don't. And I get it, because for me, like, if I post stories of me on set, it looks like I'm busy. It looks like I'm working, and it's cool. But for me, like, I'll post occasional stories. Granted, that's changed a bit just because we're not really working that much anymore. I don't, one thing I've stopped doing is posting like kit photos. I know a lot of people, like, their whole Instagram is built on photos of fucking built out cameras or gimbals or whatever. But I just, like, I can't do that anymore, because, like, seeing that stuff, like, same as like on set stories, like, I'm trying to do them. If I'm not sharing something in one way, like, if I'm not explaining something, if it's maybe I'm on a story, I'm like, the last thing I think I posted of a story on set was when I was skating. I was like camera operating and skating at the same time, and that's something different, and that's why I posted that. But for me to just, like, basically flex, not saying that other people are, but for me, that's how I feel. It's like, this is me, I'm working and I'm showing off. I don't, knowing how that effect and how, what that had on my mental health, I don't want to be responsible for doing that to other people. So I'm just, for me now, I'm just not doing it. I'll post, like, maybe I'll post a story thing and it will be like a breakdown of what I'm lighting or what we're doing that day. But yeah, I've totally changed that, my kind of social media. And I don't post pictures of cameras, because the same thing. It's like, if I'm not like helping someone, or I'm not giving them something in some way, if there's no value in it, then as far as I'm concerned, I feel like I'm just showing off, and that's not really like something I want to do.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That was really long and sort of self-involved for a question that wasn't even at me.
No, it was great, and I think yours is so personable and it's so relatable, because you were, like you said, you were in that lowest point and you felt it. And I think it is tricky, because we all compare each other and compare ourselves, and it's tricky. I do feel there's a trend with Instagram, and it is slowly becoming more real in other ways. People are posting more, especially now with the whole pandemic and stuff, and with the coronavirus, like, you're seeing real people now, you're seeing real stories, seeing how bored people can be. But there was a trend towards people started posting more BTS, and I know Sean's speaking about that, but I kind of dig it, and I wanted to start putting more BTS out there on my stuff to show that I'm a real person behind all of this, because I think the days of, like, just posting beautiful curated frames are going to slowly fade away, because everyone's just getting tired of that, because we're all doing it. So everyone's just posting beautiful frames, and it's cool to sometimes see there's a person behind that. I also wouldn't neglect Instagram or social media. People do look for that stuff, and as a cinematographer, it's another platform to put your work out on. So besides having a website or a Vimeo, it is a easily digestible place. So it sounds like I'm, like, contradicting myself. So I wouldn't neglect it, but I did enjoy what Carter said, and I do understand where he's coming from. I'm a big fan of stories, but that's just because I have ADD and I love posting dumb shit from set. I think that's why.
Yeah. No, I think, but again, it's like, who's to say what's right or wrong? I can only like do what I do. And interpret things as I interpret them. I don't think I'll ever not just post frames of my work on my main feed. Because like Steph's just saying right now, well, I don't know about visual CV of your life, but for me, because I don't put anything else on there really, that's not work, but like that front page is, that feed is like your work. So I don't want to have like a BTS photo as my, or like on my feed. I'd put that stuff in my stories and maybe a highlight story.
I think for me, I'm just trying to show that there's a human being behind it all as well, because I am, like, it's weird. I think people can get you wrong across social media. People can meet you. I've had it happen to me 2 or 3 times. People meet me and they're like, oh, you're really a nice, easygoing person, or you're really fun and whatever, easy. And I expected you to be like an asshole. And I'm like, no, I'm quite easy. I'm a nice dude. I don't want to be an asshole, because I've met people I've looked up to, and I've met them and I'm like, you're a dick. I don't want to be that.
Well, so, you're not supposed to meet your heroes.
Yeah, exactly. Don't meet your heroes, because I've seen like heroes throw stuff at people. But it's just, I don't know. It's just another platform, and I think we should use it. And I think if I had to be honest, this week more than ever, just being in isolation and everyone being home, I've actually found Instagram so relatable and so nice. I've had conversations with people, like real conversations with people I've always wanted to. And I think it's just made everyone slow down. So I've had some really meaningful conversations and with directors I wanted to work with. And I think now is still a good time to talk to people and reach out to people who've always been too busy. Or maybe you've been too busy. I think I'm quite fortunate to have enough work when there was work around and we weren't all like locked down. But there are real relationships to be made out of those digital relationships that become real and become physical relationships. And I think it's another means to a way, and I think don't neglect it. I don't want to neglect it. I want to keep communicating with people.
What's this last one? Read it out.
Which one? Gonna sign off.
No.
So as, good. Well done. Which one?
Gonna sign off.
As a director, I love BTS.
Yeah.
Go for it. Okay, sorry, Masepo. As a director, I love BTS. Don't neglect it, because sometimes I personally, that's where I get as a director, how to do a certain shot or use it as inspiration as to how to shoot or tackle a certain commercial or scene. So technical BTS is the best thing for most directors, especially young directors, to learn. So I would encourage DOPs to post them.
But that's interesting, because surely that's not the director's problem to be worrying about the technicalities of stuff. That's our job, right?
Tell Matepo that. But Matepo's a super technical director. She likes understanding things. So then when she goes into a pitch, she's able to kind of explain that. She's taught me a lot lately. So her and I have been chatting about stuff, and she's been really teaching me. There's a lot of stuff we don't always understand that directors go through with agencies and stuff. So it's really cool to hear the other side of it. And as much as we sit here moaning about not working, can you imagine being a director after going for 3 or 4 pitches and not winning? No. I've had this conversation with some directors, and it must be so brutal. So I can only imagine.
Yeah, I got so much love for directors, especially music video. Well, actually any, like, but music videos and commercial directors, just because that the whole pitching process, you're fucking working for free on every job, even, and you might not get that job, you know what I mean? Like, very rarely, I've heard of once, and that was actually quite recently, of a director being paid to write a treatment, and they get paid whether they got the job or not, but that doesn't happen, do you know what I mean? So part of your job is working for free just to try and get a job. That's mad. I mean, probably DPs, we kind of do it. Like, I've gone and done camera tests on my own time. But yeah, the fucking hell, directors got it tough. And especially like what's expected of them, I think, when there's no budget as well. Like, what's expected of directors is just fucking ridiculous. And also, like, sometimes it creates this chain of people calling in favors. So, like, you really want to work with the director, and the director wants to make this video happen. So then you do them the job for a favor. But then you're now to try and make something happen. You're calling in favors. And then that person that you've called in a favor is probably trying to call in a favor. You know, just like, and I think that all stems from just directors being expected to deliver so much for so little. It's fucked up. Yeah, exactly, Steph. Every shoot is a favor. Unless you're on APA, then you're fucking flossing.
What a Jared. Hey, Jared, what's up, dude? So Jared said, can you talk us through some of the filters you've used and any personal favorites, and why are they your favorites? I think I got you hooked on non-Hollywood, so yeah. I'll give you my secrets.
Yeah, but
there's a cool thing that I've noticed a lot of British DPs are doing is mixing filters. And there's a lot of guys are mixing like soft effects or like classic effects with a Pro Mist or a Glamour, like a Glimmer Glass. For me, I was a big fan of Hollywood Blackmagic's, Tiffin Black Pro Mists for a long time. And then I kind of fell out of love with them. And now I'm using Hollywood Blackmagic's, the Schneiders. And they really lovely glass filters. And I find they a bit of a hybrid filter. If you had a mix like a classic soft or a glimmer glass with a Pro Mist, it's pretty much what you would get. So they're a bit of a hybrid filter in essence. And I find they bloom highlights ever so slightly, but they also soften skin tones a hell of a lot. And I pretty much use them on a lot of commercials now. I'm trying to test that. Have you heard about Radiance filters? There's a new Radiance glass. I want to test these out. They've just come out. I want to test those out soon. And then what else do I enjoy? Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like I said, still Pro Mist when I do period pieces. And then with anamorphic, I try not to put too much in front of a lens. I'm a big fan of anamorphic glass, and I try not to put too many filters because I find anamorphic, in essence, is quite soft and quite like it's really got enough character. You don't have to put much in front of the lens to add anything else. So that's it with filters.
Was it just filters?
Any favorites? Yeah.
Right. Okay. All right. Is there more? Is there any more questions that we
think
missed?
That's all the questions. I think.
Damn, yeah. This is gone.
Pretty bored people. Have I shot underwater before? That's from Alex. Man. Alex, I was actually meant to shoot. This is so weird, dude. I was meant to shoot underwater last week. Well, not last week, the week before. And then this is a scary. Carter, can I tell a story about how I thought I had corona for a week?
Yeah, go for it. As long as it's
so like,
yeah,
it's short.
Yeah.
It's
no, quick. No, it's quick.
No, I don't. I didn't. Yeah, so it's short. So, dude, we were on a recce maybe 2 weeks back, 3 weeks back, and we got a message that our AD possibly had, our AD was possibly been exposed to COVID-19, and then the whole crew had to kind of go into lockdown for like a week. So that was quite a scary thing. But anyway, I was possibly meant to do an underwater shoot. And what I was going to do is we were going to put a camera in a underwater housing, which we couldn't afford. So we ended up getting a fish tank, and we're going to put the camera in a fish tank and go just below the surface of the water. Quick little trick, but I think many people know about this already. But I had to step off the shoot because I was possibly sick, or I'd been exposed to someone. But luckily that person tested negative. I also therefore didn't have to go for a test because I wasn't showing any symptoms. So that was pretty scary. That was a really scary week for me. So I've had a week of isolation prior to all this week of isolation, and I'm felt really good and I feel fine, but it was a scary week. But no, I haven't shot underwater. And
he's done the fish tank trick too.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, cool. Yeah, it's definitely sketchy, and you have to be super careful. We were actually going to put, like, I don't know if you'd call them pool noodles, that's what we call them in South Africa, mm-hmm. but like we're going to use them underneath the tank just to make sure it never bobs below the surface. But Alex, I haven't done underwater stuff, and I don't think I'm good enough to do underwater stuff. I know my limits. It's like such a specialized finesse thing.
That's a niche, isn't it? I think that's
it's
like,
so niche. That's lame. I would definitely cannot. I can't swim in that lane. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like those kind of things, I would just get an underwater DP for that.
Yeah,
for that
job,
or at least like an underwater operator.
Yeah.
Because that is like. That's a lane. Just like everyone has their niche, but then if you're like the underwater guy or underwater girl, and that's all you do, then like how are we ever gonna? We're not gonna be able to. We don't have the skill. Unless it's just a low key thing where the fish tank thing works. But I think if it's like a legit underwater setup, then it's probably better to bring a specialist on for that day.
And they'll normally come with all the kits, and they'll probably come with the underwater housing, or they'll know where to. And if you are doing underwater properly, you'll have budget to get a proper underwater housing, because like we in Johannesburg, there's not really a need for much underwater stuff, whereas Alex, you're in Cape Town, you guys definitely shoot way more underwater stuff than us, and there's a lot of surfers down there, so those guys are really good at swimming already, so they bring that skill to the table, and then couple that with a good cinematographer or operator, they'll be able to nail that stuff.
Oh, how are you approaching lighting underwater? Yeah, you are. Oh. I feel like you would, if it depends on, for me, well, this isn't my question, but
please answer.
Well, no, I think like lighting, because I don't know the actual amount, but there's like shooting that's through water. There's like a formula that tells you
refraction.
Like
refraction. Yeah.
Yeah. Of like how many stops of light the thing kills. And it's just like, I don't know if I would really take it on. One, for fear of fucking it up, and the other fear would be if I did a good job, chances are 5 years time, I'm a fucking underwater DP and I don't want to do that. Like no disrespect to the underwater DPs. Like that's sick, but it's not where I want to go.
So Alex, if I could comment for, and you can hit me up after this, you can message me after this if you want to chat about this more, dude, because I think you might have a shoot coming up where you were thinking of doing it. We had to do a pickup for a scene. We were going to have someone drowning, and obviously we couldn't get the camera deep underwater to have someone drown. So what I was going to do is we're going to shoot in someone's pool, and we're going to drape a 12 by 12 blackout against the back of the pool, and then use the underwater fish tank housing and drop that just below the surface of water. And then what I was going to use is two 2.5 HMIs, sorry, I hit the mic there, backlighting or side lighting the talons. And I think there would have been enough bounce and enough from the floor of the pool would have also lifted into the shadows. So that was my thinking. That's what I was going to do. So drop me a message. We can chat about it a bit more. Because I do agree, you're going to lose a stop or two because of the refraction level of the water. And also the angle of the way the light bounces.
Exactly. You lose a lot shooting through water. Yeah.
Otherwise, underwater lighting. I know some of those digital Sputniks are like, they're like waterproof. So some of those lights can go underwater. So if you really had to, you could always put one of those in the pool or in a tank or whatever you were doing.
And just have no whites. because yeah. digital Sputniks exactly. aren't bright, are they?
No. And let's walk it in. Awesome.
Okay, well, should we wrap that up then?
I think. Yeah, cool. Thanks for having me.
No worries, man. Thank you for doing this. We and actually for our tests, because that was, you know, we took up probably an hour and a half of, I took an hour and a half of your time up before we even did this. So for you guys listening, like, we originally were going to do it on Twitch, and we did like a test where we streamed it through Twitch. It was on Zoom through Twitch, and it didn't work. And I was like, okay, cool, don't worry, let's hang up, let me fucking spend a bit more time and figure this out. And then I hit him up like, yo, let's do another test, I figured it out. Like, I was convinced I'd figured it out, and then he came on and it just fucking didn't work again. So that's why we decided to do it this way. But yeah, Rick gave up a lot of time before even doing this chat, so thank you very much. And thank you guys for sitting in. This was dope. I'm glad that people actually found value in this. I mean, I hope you did. People yeah, saying thanks. Thank you. So polite.
Yeah, there we go. People saying thanks. Yeah, I'm glad it wasn't a snooze fest. At least it wasn't. Cool.
So where can people check your work, and what's the best way for people to get in touch with you?
I'm quite active on Instagram, so you can check me on Insta. It's RickJoaquim. That's my handle, so it's Rick Joaquim. And then I've also got a website, so it's just www.rickjoaquim.com. You can check out some of my work there. And yeah, hit me up there if you want to chat or anyone wants to just pick my mind.
Thank you, everyone, for joining. I really appreciate it. I'll hopefully catch you soon. Goodbye.